Now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Jean M. from Chula Vista.
Good evening. My name is Jean and I'm an alcoholic. I always wanted to do this and I'm not going to do it tonight, but in November I'll have 56 years clean and sober through the grace through working the steps, calling my sponsor, and practicing the principles of this program. And I think that that's a message in itself, and I've always wanted to get down afterwards and say, that's it. Because it is a message, right? I couldn't have done it unless I'd walked into these rooms. I started drinking when I was a very young girl, sort of like Dave. When I took my first drink, I took it at 10 because I was a latchkey child and my parents worked all the time and I was alone. So I was lonely. And, okay, I just turned 80, by the way, so I'm going to talk about a little bit of history that you may not remember. But they used to put these ads on the radio about the USO. Do you know what a radio is? And it used to say, invite a serviceman to your house for dinner. Because they're lonely. And so I called and somehow manipulated to have a couple of sailors come out and eat dinner. Now, at this young, tender age, we used to have decanters of alcohol sitting on the buffet or whatever you called it. And at this young, tender age, because I didn't know how to cook, I knew that if I got them drunk, they wouldn't know the difference. So we all got drunk together, and my parents came home, and there I was on the swing with these two sailors drunk out of my mind. That's probably when I learned that alcohol would allow me to be anybody I wanted to be at that time. And I ran away from home. I spent a year and a half in girls' correctional school where I took a chemistry class, and guess what I learned how to do was make beer. And they discovered it and said, who did it? And I went up and said, I did it. And they said, oh, no, you're too innocent looking. So anyway, I did make the beer. And so I was in girls' correctional school for a long time. And when I got out, I still continued to be a delinquent and got married because I didn't want to live at my house anymore. So I got married at 15 and a half. They used to let us do that. I don't know if they still do. Had a daughter at 16 and a half who, by the way, is 63. Is that awful? My baby is 63. And when I was pregnant, alcohol was so very, very important to me because I really could not live without it. It made me be whoever I wanted to be. I was a shy little girl, and that's who you're seeing up here today, believe it or not, is a shy little girl. And when I drank alcohol, I became the party girl. And I was fun, at least I thought I was. And I could do anything. So when I was pregnant with my daughter, I got drunk and got thrown in juvenile hall, got out of there, and still continued to drink. I'm very lucky that she did not have alcohol syndrome and that she came out normal and that she's okay. But I drank for the first 8 years of her life, and I'm not real proud of that because I wanted to be a good mother. I loved my daughter, but alcohol took me away from all of that. And So I left her with other people that took care of her for the first 8 years of her life, and drank. Went to Tijuana, got thrown. Listen to this. You talk about how you did something and then, you know, went right out and did it. I was down in Tijuana once drinking myself drunk. And I guess I got so drunk that I'm sitting on the curb down there. Now, at that time, I was this young, cute redhead in an apricot suit. I'll never forget it. And I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. There's a little bug that wants me. Excuse me, I'm not, don't need medication. But I'm sitting on the curb yelling at the top of my lungs, take me, rape me, and kill me. And the police came up to quiet me and arrested me, and a Mexican pilot saw all this go down, and they threw me in the Tijuana jail. Nobody spoke English, by the way. And when I woke up, I was banging my head on the bar, screaming at the top of my lungs. I was stripped of everything except the bare essentials, and they took me in this little truck, panel truck, and drove me to some judge who didn't speak English either. And I was headed for, back then, what you would call white slavery, because it was, you know, I was there. This pilot saw me and bailed me out and took me back to the States. Now, what's significant about this story is that scared the heck out of me today when I think about it. But guess what I did? I went to the bar, had a drink, laughed about it, and joked about it like it was fun. You know, that's crazy. Is that not right? Totally crazy. Almost lost my freedom. And some poor guy saw that and bailed me out, and all I could do was get drunk and celebrate. I mean, there's many other stories that I can tell you. I just want you to know that alcohol did for me at that time what I didn't think I could do for myself. And it took me to places that I did not want to be. I would wake up, not know where I was, who I was with. I did things I was not proud of. I think there was a newspaper article, and I got real mouthy with this reporter. So the first line was, at 16, Gene M., was an alcoholic, a prostitute, and a mother. So that's where I was with my drinking. Anything to keep drinking. Didn't have much money, but I knew how to get money. And this went on until I worked in a hotel that all right across the street from a Lano Club. At that time, we called them Alano Clubs, because remember, this is 50-some years ago. And most of the people that lived in this hotel were residents and were members of the Alano Club up there on Fifth Avenue. And one night, I got real drunk and wanted to date this guy, so I went up and knocked on his door, and he wouldn't have anything to do with me, so I whimpered on the bottom of his bed and went just passed out there. And the next time I saw him, he took me to an AA meeting. And I looked at all you people, and I thought, oh, my God, isn't that wonderful for you? Because definitely there was, and believe it or not, 56 years ago when I came in, everybody had white hair. And I was 24 and a half years old. I had been, knew I was in trouble, so I had been to my doctor, and he told me that my problem, that it wasn't alcohol. I mean, how could I be an alcoholic? I was 24 years old. But it was men. So I gave up men. Then I went to my boss. And I asked him, what's wrong with me? And he said that it was my money, so I let him handle my money. And I had a list of psychiatrists in my pocket because I knew that I was different and that I was crazy, because when I wasn't drinking, I would dress all in black and sit in my room. It wasn't often that this would happen, but when I wasn't drinking, I would contemplate being this bad, wanting to die. I tried suicide two or three times until the last doctor that sewed up my arm said, don't come to us again. Jump off a building. We don't want to repair you. All right? And you know, that sounds cruel, but it was the truth, you know? And it made me stop and think. And I was sitting on the El Cortez, by the way. That was the tallest building in San Diego at that time. And so then I would drink some more, do some more things that I would be ashamed of. I was convinced that I was put on this earth to be the perfect example to all girls what not to be. That I somehow knew that God loved me, but I certainly thought that he had this job for me to let you know what you shouldn't do, because I felt that bad about myself. And it took a long time to get over that feeling, by the way. And sometimes I even wonder if I'm over it. so I went to that meeting and I looked at all those people and thought it was wonderful that you were there. And believe it or not, some people in that meeting at the Alano Club who had white hair shook their finger at me and said, little girl, go out and drink some more. I drank longer than you are old. It was very difficult. There weren't that many women. There weren't that many young people. I was one of four young people in San Diego to get clean, and I think I'm the last remaining one. The rest have all passed away and all clean and sober, by the way. So I went long enough because I wanted to date this guy. I wish it was different. Well, because a lot of us come in, and I came in not thinking that I had anything of valuable except my pelvic area. And, it, you know, we don't, go away, little bug. We just have so little self-worth from the things that we do and did that, for me anyway, that's all I thought I had to offer anybody in this world. Anyway, I heard my story, and I heard people that thought like I thought. I heard people that had done things that I had done even way back then, and eventually I could identify. Now, it was difficult for me because, like I said, everybody had white hair, were older, and all that. But at the same, so I would take like 45 minutes to explain to you why I thought I was an alcoholic. And actually, I was trying to convince myself that I was. But I did, and I stayed, and I have not had a drink since. So, I knew some of the people in the book because they were still around. I got to meet Bill Wilson at the Long Beach Convention, at the very first convention that Alcoholics Anonymous came out of the closet, which was quite an honor because before that they were meeting in the basement of churches and things, and finally Long Beach hosted a conference, a convention, and it had Welcome Alcoholics Anonymous across the street. They put on, of course, extra police, extra fire chief, because they fire everything, because they felt that if any of us got drunk, that they would have a mess on their hands. And they would have, had we. And I met Bill Wilson and Lois briefly, and it was a real honor, and it was also the most exciting, exhilarating thing I'd ever been to in my life. We all sat in the stadium, and we all lit a match, and I don't think there was that many of us, but not like it is today, and that warmed my heart to see all those other people that had done the things that I had done and were now doing something about their life. Let me tell you that I had a really good sponsor. She's in the back of the book. Tough lady. Harsh lady. I still have a sponsor today, by the way, because I believe in this program so very, very much that I still practice these principles in all my affairs. Now, that drives people nuts, by the way, because they want me to be real smart and have answers, and I'll say, well, let's wait and see. You know? And literally, I practice that. I will go upstairs. I always like this story. There's a man sitting down on my couch with two children, and he's been everywhere for help, and nobody will help him without having him giving up his children. And so I don't know what to do with him either, but I want to help him. So I go upstairs, and I pray. And I come back downstairs, and I take him into one of our programs and take his children into one of our programs. So they're in our program at the same time. Now, that's nothing I thought of, ladies and gentlemen. That's because I have turned my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand him, and he gives me direction every day. I struggled with, and I still work the steps to the best of my ability, every day. And you know, I call myself an addict as well as an alcoholic, and I'll tell you why. Because I've been addicted to a lot of things other than alcohol and drugs since I've been clean. I always tell people, you know, I'm around 56 years almost in November. Who's counting? But I always let you know I'm here because you don't have to be perfect, because look at me, I'm not. And so it just is a message that you do the very best you can, and you stick close to the support group and the people in this program, and you can do it. If I did it, you can. I struggled with the fourth step, and I still find out after all these years that I need to take it more thoroughly each and every time. All right? Because there's so much. One of the things, disadvantages of having some time in this program is sometimes you forget. All right? Or some of the people that we work with, I want them to have as much sobriety as I have and act like I do, right, with 50 days. And I think we have to guard against that and remember that they're newcomers and that we need to give them the chance to learn. I know there's some people over there with 35 days, and I just want to tell you that this, and I told him that this is the best time of your life, by the way. In your first year and a half of being clean and sober, all you have to worry about is being clean and sober, right? You don't have to pay taxes or register your car or do all those things. So relax and enjoy it, right? Because it's going to be the best time, because you're going to become responsible, productive people like you're supposed to, and we do get restored. We're having a walk for sobriety next August and next weekend. And I want to tell the story about that, because with my family, I never talk about my work, and I don't talk very much about my addiction because they're all yuppies up in Del Mar. So we talk about their stuff. And I've watched... But they knew I was in recovery, and when my granddaughter was 16, she asked me to tell her my story. And I truly believe that it's not a program of promotion. It's a program of attraction. And I've always said that I tried very hard to be the person that if they got in trouble that they would come to, because I was attractive to them and my lifestyle was attractive. So that's what I've done with my grandchildren. And sure enough, the 16-year-old girl came and said, tell me your story. And I did, and she said, well, I'm drinking, you know. And she says, I can handle it, Grandma. And I said, well, I believe you, but let me tell you something about alcohol. Not about me, but about alcohol and how it affects the brain and da-da-da-da. And she says, oh, thank you very much for that information. 3 weeks later, I hear that they're carrying her out of a house drunk on her butt, okay? But I still do not promote it. I still have been the attraction and not promotion about it. She came to work for me. She's 23 now. She came to work for me last October, and she wrote some of our curriculum. She graduated from USC, wrote some of our curriculum, and learned so much, and has learned so much by coming to work for me and being around all of us, not just me. And she's talks about having empathy and compassion for people now. And the thing that she was most impressed with is why we're having this walk, is that when we get out of our disease and start working these steps to the best of our abilities, get cleaned up, all the positive things happen. All right? We did a little YouTube video, and we asked everybody, some of my employees, what was significant to them about being clean and sober. And guess what it was? It wasn't cars. It wasn't having money. It wasn't having a job. It was about being a mother, being a father, being a parent, being a daughter, being a son, being a grandma. All right? I always tell people that I have two titles, CEO and Grandma. I love Grandma the best, right? That's what being clean and sober means to most of us. Not how much money you have in your pocket. It's about your relationships with your family and with others. Is that not right? Yeah. And that's what came across real loud and clear. So she said, Grandma, we need to celebrate recovery and sobriety. And so she's putting this walk on. We have so far almost 200 walkers, and I invite you to join us because it's going to be a great celebration. Some of you know this because I see some old timers in here. But what a pleasure it is when I thought that I would wind up either dead or incarcerated for the rest of my life, to watch my granddaughter stand up in front of the people that I work with, which are recovering alcoholics and addicts, and hold her own with them and have compassion and love for them, whereas, you know, she didn't being a yuppie up in Del Mar, okay? And going to USC and Torrey Pines and all those things, that feeling is just cannot be expressed in words. And it brings tears to my eyes every time that I see her and know that this isn't just changed my life, but it's changing this young girl's life, you know. And I have not ever preached to her. I have just been what this program has taught me to be, which is an attraction to this program. And I believe that with my whole heart, that that this is what we're here for, is to be as attractive as we can be so that others will follow. Is that not right? Yeah. And last week they did an 80-year-old birthday party for me. And by the way, I just have to share with you, because I get to share whatever I want with you. But I look good on the outside, okay? But last night, it was warm, so I put on some shorts to go to bed in, and I looked down and said, oh, my God, where did this little old lady come from? Because my spirit's not there, right? And my grandson came from Washington, D.C. He went through law school. He's now a big shot attorney in D.C., well, an associate, working for a big firm, FDA. And when he came here and I talked about how I get up every morning, which I do, by the way, and have for the last 50-some years, and put on my suit and coat and say, okay, what do you want me to do today? So that's how I do it. That's what I do. I have followed. I have a great agency, and I know I get a lot of credit for that. But, folks, it's not mine. It's always been run by a power greater than ourselves. You know, we do his work, and we do it well because most of the people that work for me are in recovery. And, you know, we need to keep that tradition, and believe me, mental health is coming in, trying to take it away, but we're going to fight to the bitter end with the funding and everything. But that's why we have a great agency, and I know some of you are aware of it because some of you have been there. But God leads us all, and we try to carry the message to the best of our ability. I wish words, and some, I think all of you understand it, but words could express the love that I feel for myself today, that I can give love back to other people. And I do. I could love everybody in this room because I love myself. And I think that's what the 12 steps has done for me, because I had no self-esteem when I came to this program. And to this day, I have other people make their beds every morning, and I live alone. Somebody says, why don't you get married again? I said, no, been there, done that. I sleep with a 110-pound yellow lab named Vinny, who throws his arm over me, moans, groans, snores, and farts all night long. So I don't need to get married. Does, doesn't it? But this has been a good life and been a party. It really has. And one of the things that I thought that when I got clean and sober that I would have to give up was fun. I was going to be in a rocking chair knitting. And believe me, this time has gone by so fast. It's unbelievable. I mean, it has been, and it's fun. I mean, if you gave me a pill and said I could drink, I would say, keep it away. I don't want it anymore. Alcohol does nothing to my body except damage it. Look at me. I'm in perfect health. You know, not a thing wrong with me. Not one pill. They ask me when I go to a doctor, because I'm 80, right? What medications are you on? I'm not on anything. And I've used the steps. I think I had some mental health issues when I first came in, terrible depression. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I know the new thing is to take this for something, right? But I did it with the 12 steps, and I still believe that the 12 steps will get you out of whatever kind of mental health issue you may be having if you work the steps to the very best of your ability. And I'll just go online saying that, and you can hit me later. But I had chronic depression. I was manic depressive. And I came out of it by working the 12 steps. And I believe in those with my whole heart. Oh, my grandson, anyway, he heard me and he said, Grandma, I got up this morning and said, God, what should I do today? And he didn't tell me anything. But he's 28 years old and he's a big shot attorney, so what else? What do you expect? I am not a great speaker, and I just want to tell you my story. I want to let you know what happened, because I will never, ever say no to this program. No matter what it asks me to do, I will give back to it, because it gave me my life. It gave me my family. It gave me two beautiful grandchildren that love and respect me no matter what. And believe me, I'm not perfect. Be careful, though, because I'm going to tell you how insidious this disease is. I love Texas Hold'em poker. So I hold a Texas Hold'em poker tournament in my house every month. And once in a while, somebody that drinks comes, and they leave their booze in my refrigerator because they know I'm not going to touch it, right? One day, I'm by myself, and this is 52, when I'm 52 years clean and sober, I'm by myself, and this beer has been in my refrigerator for about 6 months, and I hadn't noticed it, but this one day, I open up the refrigerator door, and I see it, and I say, wonder what it tastes like. Who would know? All right? Now, that lasted just that long because I do work this program. Come on, Gene, you know it. You have never forgotten what it tastes like. You know, what the F are you thinking about? Nobody else would know, but you would know, but I'm just telling you, you know, that's how insidious this disease is, that it grabs you at the most god-awful moment. And so, of course, I called my sponsor and my support group, because that's real important to me. It still is. I heard you say it, Dave. You've got, you know, a support group and people that you're living with. You need